All right. Good morning and welcome to the show, the Gareth Cliff Show on The Real Network. This morning we are live. I'm in Cape Town. Leanne is in her house. And George, there he is, George Meany. How's it, George? How are you?
Hello, Leanne. Hello, Gareth. I'm good and you? Didn't have to drive to the studios this morning. Reminds me of lockdown.
Yeah. I know. It feels weird, right? But we're all in different places. So, George, first and foremost, how are you and what's news?
Very well. I'm traveling all over the world. I'm the month of October feels like I'm not going to be at home. So it's very busy at the moment. I think it's the rush to the end of the year. Everybody gets crazy. I think that's the problem.
Yeah. Did you have a weekend? Did you do anything this weekend?
I did have a weekend. I did as little as possible. Did a few errands, did a few things around the house. Yesterday I do my usual Sunday afternoon admin thing and then Sunday night, take some time and I watch a series of some sort.
Mm. So what are you watching?
I am watching it's either the prequel or the sequel to The Vampire Diaries called The Originals.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Is that
is that the one that starts that scene with those three women, vampire, vampire, fucking vampire? Is that it?
No.
wrong series. Sorry. I ask because, like, you're one of the most disciplined people I know. Like, you have a routine that starts every day, and often, like, when you do the show with us, it kind of disrupts that routine. What's your normal thing? What time do you wake up? What do you do first?
So generally, and I say generally because I believe in the Pareto principle. So yes. If you get things right 80 to 90% of the time, you're successful.
Yes.
Perfect is
the enemy of getting shit done, right?
Exactly.
Don't strive for perfection, strive for progress.
Yes, right. Progress. I think that's the right word, is progress. So generally, alarm goes off at about 4:30. Not about, exactly 4:30, as a matter of fact. It annoys the shit out of me. so alarm goes off at 4:30. I end up probably getting out of bed after one snooze. Sometimes I get out of bed at 4:30. So anybody who says they spring out of bed, they're lying.
Bullshit.
They're absolutely lying. I do generally wake up in a good mood because of years of choosing to do so. And I think that's an important thing. You get out of bed and you're grumpy. Some people are like, oh, I'm grumpy until my first cup of coffee. And you've just made the choice to be choose to wake up in a good mood. So the fact that you've actually woken up and not in one of those graves is a good thing.
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
No, the reason I ask is because I did hear about 2 weeks ago, I heard this Andrew Huberman interview, and I've never really paid much attention to him, but he made very sensible comments about how you've got to start your day right and you've got to take the day on with energy, right? There's nothing worse than those
more passion, more energy.
Those people who are energy vampires who you encounter on a daily basis, who are like they're there in the existence just to sap your life out of you, and you feel by the end of the day like depleted, even though you've got all the things that you needed to do done, and you've had a productive day, but you feel exhausted because you've been spending the time around people who just drain you. You don't need that, right?
You don't. You absolutely don't. And I mean, if you think about my job, 80 to 90% of the time is in front of people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my job at Auto Trader is to set direction, set vision, set strategy, and then to manage people to that strategy or to that vision. And to not execute that strategy or vision, because otherwise I can never get to scale. The only way to get to scale is to have a team of people that can execute the vision, because you can't do everything yourself. And so doing that is a very, very high energy, intense thing. I think the the brain consumes about a third of your energy of your body. Something to that weighs like a couple of kilograms.
And 7 kilograms. Your head weighs 7 kilograms, I think.
Which includes your skull. So your brain probably weighs less. And consumes a third of your body's energy. So decision-making, energy's blood suckers, take it out of you during the day. So you've got to start your day with... Oh, I'm not interested in that, Siri.
You started your day at 4:30, George.
Yes, started my day at 4:30. I get into the gym because I think gym in the morning, you know, specifically weight training in the morning, kind of, I think, gets blood to parts of your body that are not going to get blood for, you know, most of the day. So for me, that actually provides my body with a sense of I've completed a task, number one, and number two, I've got some energy from actually going to gym. The blood has gotten flowing and I'm probably more awake.
So Carl DeSantos says Jacob Zuma's head weighs 8 kilograms, but his brain only weighs 0.5. Congo Chris has a very important question for you, George. And because George is the CEO of Auto Trader, we always get these things for him. And I'm just going to throw them in randomly. So what's the worst car you've ever driven?
I have a straight up answer to this question. And the answer is quite simple. The first car I ever bought was a Lemon.
A lemon?
Yes, a real piece of crap. And that was a VW Passat.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
The guy that sold it to me, now there's nothing wrong with a VW Passat, but that particular one, the guy that sold it to me really sold me a lemon. About a week or two after I'd gotten the car, I was 18 years old. It started smoking plumes of smoke out the back. It was.
It's so weird how because a Passat is kind of, if you look at a Passat now, a VW Passat, it's kind of in between a young person's car and an old man's car.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that transition.
But it's also the name Passat just sounds shit. It's like Passat. Mm. But Jody says, surely a Bajaj, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you can say a Bajaj is a car.
No,
yeah, that's it.
It's somewhere between
it's more like a motorbike, yeah, with the engine in the back.
Hey, George, listen, I just got this update from Dr. Jonathan Witt. He says, blood goes everywhere all the time. Otherwise, those parts of your body would die. Stop being silly, Borge, but continue your gym regardless.
I'm
pretty sure there are places in your body where blood battles to get.
Well, then
call the brain.
There's violence right, for that.
Yeah. Maybe get your heart beating a bit faster is what George meant there.
And yeah, I think it's really blood flow and heart rate thing. So
listen, I got to tell people about the last time you and I went for a coffee, George, because this is hilarious. George and I sit down for a coffee. We've got limited time. He's really busy. He's just come from one meeting. He's going to the next one. So we sit down, and the first thing we do is we get super competitive about our levels in discovery, bank, and health.
Oh, right? Your status.
You have no idea. George tells me how to hack the... I got the bank thing right, George. You'll be very pleased to know.
Awesome.
Since we spoke, so now I'm on the same level as you in the bank, and I'm getting to the health one. Don't worry. By the end of this year, you and I are going to be...
I said I'll join this challenge.
Okay, go on.
Because I had my consultant... phoned me the other day and say, all right, Leanne, let's get you up. The goal is this by December. So right. I'm pretty much in there. In fact, I didn't have Discovery Bank, but I'm in the process of getting that now just so that I can get my points up.
Yeah, Discovery Miles Bros, says Bitcoin Book. Yeah, I know it's a complete hack and it's stupid and it's just gaming. But the reality is, like, I love to have a goal and then to pursue that goal and to win. Right. Same with you, George.
Yeah, I think it's natural, and I think it comes from the days of the Vikings. You know, I listened to somebody say something the other day. Technology and our technological advancement on the planet has been a very, very minute part of our evolution.
Right.
The vast majority of our evolution has really been chasing something, succeeding, killing it, eating it,
right,
and then basking in the sunshine.
Men, that's not competitive. Men that's not competitive are old, says
Ray. In other words, men who are not competitive.
Yeah, I think that's right. But it's also, I mean, whether it's that, whether it's, being able to drive the car of your dreams, whether it's being able to, compare notes on interesting things that you've heard. I heard an interesting thing, too, about the difference between men and women. Like, women commune with each other. Women become friends, develop relationships, develop trust by sharing personal stories, their emotions, being vulnerable with each other, all of those things, right? Which seem kind of obvious, but that's what largely psychology has also done. And men don't. Men don't bond over that stuff. Do you know what men bond over?
Competition?
Partly. That's lesser. It's down the list, but it's about three or four. The number one thing that men do when they're bonding is share information. But like info, not opinions.
Not feelings, info. Yeah.
No, like men are really getting along when they say to each other, listen, you've got to try this, and I found this thing the other day, and here's this resource that you can use, and if you do that, then you'll get this. That's how you know like guys are really getting to know each other and like being around each other. Isn't that crazy?
That's absolutely crazy. But an extension to that, Gareth, is another thing I read, and that is, I didn't look at it this way. I didn't realize that bonding when it comes to men happens by numbers.
So
I'm probably going to screw up the numbers, but I'll give you kind of ranges. So it's not by mistake that the military they call certain sizes of the constituents within the various groups of men certain names. For instance, a platoon is a certain size.
Oh, right.
A brigade is a certain size.
Yeah.
And then you get the tactical group. I can't remember the name of the tactical group. It's anywhere between 7 and 12 men, where they'll send 7 to 12 men in to do an insurgency.
A squad.
It's a squad. And apparently, the bond between those 7 to 12 men is the highest in the entire military. You don't get that bond in a platoon. You don't get that bond in a brigade. With those 7 to 12 men, it's the only group of people who will die for each other and kill for each other. The rest in a platoon, you're going to think twice. You're going to preserve your own life before you will die for somebody that you hardly know. And the point is that men can't bond properly beyond about 12 people. And so the extension and the point of my story from the beginning was, I didn't realize that almost every sport team in the world is within that range.
That's amazing.
If you look at soccer teams, rugby teams are between 7 and 12 people.
So this is really cool. Now you've got me interested in this. So a squad, 6 to 12 members, and your
Isn't
officer
there a troop in command, as well?
But hang on. I'm just going to go through all of them. So a squad is 6 to 12 people, and your commanding officer there would be a sergeant, even though they're not officer, right? So they're in charge for organizational purposes. Then you get a section, which is 12 to 24. That's a staff sergeant who's in charge of that. Then a first or second lieutenant is in charge of a platoon or a troop. That's between 20 and 50 people.
Yep.
Yeah, so you would probably have, let's say, it's probably 2, 3, or 4 squads under a first or second lieutenant.
Yeah.
Okay, then you get an echelon, which is 50 to 90 men. Then you have a captain in charge of that. Then you have a company. A company is 100 to 250 men. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's between 10 and 20 squads.
Yeah.
And there you've got a major in charge of that. Then you've got a battalion or a regiment or a squadron, depending on what countries you're from. And that's between 300 and 1,000 men. And there you've got a lieutenant colonel. Then you've got a regiment. A regiment is 1,000 to 3,000 people. That's a colonel. A brigade is headed up by a major general. A brigade is 3,000 to 5,000 men. A division is 6,000 to 25,000. That's quite a big jump from 6,000 to 25,000. That's a division. Then you get a corps, C-O-R-P-S, and that's a general or an army general. And you get a field army, and then the entire combatant command, which is everybody. That's like 1 million to 10 million men headed up by a field marshal.
But if you think about it, that 1 million to 10 million men are made up of groups of 6 to 12.
Correct.
So if you still pull down, it's all made up of groups of 6 to 12. It's not by mistake that it's 6 to 12.
And Carl says then rugby would be a section, a 22-man match day squad. Interesting. No. Now we know why it's called a squad. That's right.
No, it's not 22. It's not 22 because there aren't 22 on the field at one time.
Yeah. But he's saying on the actual field at the time, it's a squad.
Well, 22, but that's two sides, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, but only on one team, on one side, is only 11 men.
Yeah, spot on. So that's on the field at the time. Yeah, correct.
Exactly. So I see what he means. 22 is a squad, yes, but 11 men is a brigade. What did you call it?
No, you got it the wrong way around. Other way around. Squad is the 11 on the field, and then you've got a section or a patrol, which is 12 to 24.
So that'll be a patrol, is the extension of the 11 to the 22.
Right.
And what would you call a collection of 11 women on the field?
Streakers.
Oh, Gareth.
No? Am I wrong?
It's a squad.
Am I wrong, Leanne? Sorry, I got that wrong.
Probably still a squad.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you ever thought to streak at a rugby match, Leanne?
I've streaked at concerts, but I suppose that's a different thing. I've thrown my bra at musicians on stage.
Which ones?
It was the Springbok Nude Girls. Yeah, and then that's Arno threw it back, and then his wife helped me put it back on. Taking off a bra in public is easy. Putting it back on is a mission.
Now, I had this conversation with someone just yesterday, and I'm suddenly really, really nervous about things. So I didn't go to 23andMe, but you remember when National Geographic were doing that human genome project? And they would basically look into your ancestry and tell you what percentage of your genes come from where in the world, right? Mm. They'd use the...
And you
could ask
it to do further stuff.
Yeah, sure. But you'd give it male phenotypes and female phenotypes. Your mitochondrial DNA would come from here. And so it was quite interesting. And I thought it was worthwhile to do. But apparently now, and Leanne can tell us more about this, but apparently... people are worried about what 23andMe are going to be able to do, because anyone who spit into one of the company's test tubes should be concerned. Apparently, these people are using the DNA in nefarious ways. Tell me about that.
Well, the biggest problem is that 23andMe is just not doing well at the moment in terms of a business and a company. So, it means a whole lot more. So basically, its stock is on the verge of being delisted. And just last month, it shut down its in-house drug development unit. And there have been several rounds of layoffs. So, in fact, last week, the entire board of directors quit, except for a co-founder and the company's CEO. And this CEO, her name is Anne Wojcicki. amidst this downward spiral has said that she's considering selling 23andMe. Now, that means that the DNA of the 15 million customers of 23andMe will be up for sale as well. So this genetic data is the company's most valuable asset. And so they would sell the company with this asset.
Now, who would want to buy all this DNA information? I wonder, like, good people or bad people? Let's just think about that for a second.
Well, if it's good,
be able to do with the DNA data.
Well, they'd be able to effectively look. I don't know whether these samples are kept. I don't think you keep the sample. So you do the test and then you probably discard the sample, but you associate the test with a certain name or ID number or whatever. You've got a certain amount of info on people. It's not like they've done a complete human genome for you. That's an expensive process. So they'll probably have some information like, you know, these are the general phenotypes or these are the kinds of obvious standout genetic points of interest that this person might have. But it's not like they can go and recreate your DNA or they can actually map your every chromosome. They don't do that level of detail in these tests. So they've probably got rid of the samples. They have some very basic information. Of course, it's valuable. It'll help you to develop perhaps certain kinds of drugs and things. So the pharmaceutical companies would be interested in it. But I don't think they have the level of detail they need to be able to like reconstruct your whole genome. There's no way that 23andMe have got all of that. They would need, you know, the world's largest cloud server to store that kind of information on. Or am I being naive?
So the types of companies and parties that would take an obvious interest in this would be someone like insurers. So they might be able, they probably want to know about genetic predispositions that might make you more expensive to them. In the US, a 2008 law called the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act protects against discrimination by employees and health insurers, employers rather, on the basis of genetic data, but there are gaps in it. It gives providers of life, disability, and long-term care insurance from such restrictions. So if you maybe have a genetic marker that's correlated with, say, heart disease, a life insurer could find that out and legally deny you a policy, even if you don't even develop that condition. So, I mean, it's not entirely not scary. There are things that could happen with this, especially because 23andMe is not a doctor's office. So they're not bound by HIPAA, the health privacy laws.
The scary part is that you can connect the data to a human. If that link is there, that's where the abuse could occur.
And you said like what maybe there could be good people that take it over. And in that case, it could be law enforcement agencies because they can use this information to literally track down killers and criminals and solve difficult cases by linking
people. What is the name of that CEO of 23andMe?
She's Ann Wojcicki. So Wojcicki.
And here she is when they asked her, like, now you've got all this DNA. Are you going to use it for good or bad? Here she is.
Jump it in.
I'm worried. I'm very worried.
Yo, if that's her, I'm very, very concerned.
I'm very worried that that woman is in charge of all our DNA now. If you ask me, that's what Oh, boy. All right. So, Borge, you said you're traveling all over. Where are you going?
So I'll be going to Portugal, I'll be going to Poland, just those two countries. And then
so this year it's countries with a P-O at the start of their name.
Yeah, are you going alphabetically?
Be careful, Congo Chris is going to jump on that one. and then internally just a few Cape Town trips. So it's just, you know, I've spent 30 years inside the tube of an aeroplane. And it's not the most fun thing for me anymore.
It's horrible, George. I don't know how you do it. I'm absolutely amazed by people who have done as much traveling as I think you have, and some other important people who are, you know, heads of companies and that kind of thing. Because being on planes is terrible. It's also really bad for your health.
It's
not good for you. I'm not even talking about the deep vein thrombosis stuff. I'm talking about, you know, the breathing in that foul air of all these people around you, being in a very confined space. Even if you're flying in business, I assume that someone of your caliber would be flying in business class. But, you know, for most of us, on this last trip I was on, like, economy is bloody uncomfortable and your neck is sore and you it's terrible.
Even business class, Gareth, is not comfortable. People think it's luxurious. Maybe first class. I've never been in first class in my life, but it's really not that comfortable. You know, I have a routine. So I'll get on the airplane. I do a Disprin, half a sleeping tablet, and one shot of whiskey. And you don't see me till the next morning.
Wow. Okay. There we go. We had Jolene on when I was doing the show from Bulgaria 2 weeks ago, and she said to me, the most important thing you must do is not drink, because it dehydrates you on the plane. So drink water, but don't drink anything else. And then Percy says it's the beer farts that make you the sickest on the plane. Ugh, beer farts. God, how revolting. That's what will come from our DNA. That cackling chick says Grant.
Yeah, if you put all of our DNA together in a melting pot, that's what it creates.
Yeah, jump it in.
At least she's happy, ?
All right. So Conga Chris says, I still maintain Jolene is wrong. You need to have a Bloody Mary. Oh, come on. Raven says, George, add an Allergex in there and you're sorted.
Yeah, Allergex is good. Only problem with Allergex for me is it makes me feel groggy the next morning. And I think, well, I've read, and you know, the doctor that's listening can vouch for this. I think it's because Allergex crosses the blood-brain barrier, it just makes me feel groggy.
Bitcoin Boot says, my international flight routine was book a seat at the back. When the doors close, look for an open space of three seats, go there, drink beer, and fall asleep over all three chairs. Just great. Okay, lovely. Kali said that chick from 23andMe, she got all the chromosomes.
Yeah, yes, that's what happened.
Yes, that's why she's the one. That's why they made her the boss of 23andMe. What do you think? It's by mistake. Interesting thing on planes is just the people who are able to sleep. I am so jealous of those people. Like yesterday on the flight down to Cape Town, I was pretty tired. And I'm just no good at sleeping in one of those chairs. I can never find a comfortable position.
Oh, no, on a short haul flight, I sleep quite well, but I end up doing one of these where you wake up and you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Realize everyone's been.
That's so beautiful. It's so attractive. It's lovely. It's
just George's face.
I know. George's like horrified.
I've had people kind of like, not really lie on me, but you know, they start to fall asleep and they're like they're
leaning over,
position, and then they start drooling.
Oh God. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a aisle seat person, because I don't like having to get through the people to get off, you know, out of the seat row. So I like the aisle seat. The trouble with that is you've got nothing to lean against. So even on a Cape Town flight, for instance, the window seat's actually better because you can lean against the.
Agreed.
Side. Yeah.
Totally agree. But Bitcoin Boots says he'd make his own sandwiches and then skip every cuck meal on board by eating my own fresh food. Ech, that's dodgy, hey, because what, are you going to put it in a Tupperware?
Yeah,
sardines on it.
Do you need to eat on a long-haul flight? Because most of these long-haul flights are 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
you know, so you could eat before you get on the airplane and, you know, So I think the meals that they give you when you've taken off, it's actually too late. I often don't eat them because it's too late.
If it's a really long flight, it's part of the experience, though. It cuts the boredom, especially if you're not in economy and you've got better food and there's a wine matching menu and a cheese, whatever, kind of keeps you entertained for a little bit.
Yeah, but you don't need, I'm with George, you don't need to eat on the plane. You'll be fine. You're not going to die of hunger. I still don't understand
why. What if you crash and survive?
I don't understand why they bother to give anyone a meal, even if it's at lunchtime or at supper time on a 1 or 2 hour flight. That's a complete waste of everybody's time.
That's
totally
true.
Rather make the flight cheaper and let people just get there and they can eat on the other side. There are plenty of restaurants at the airport on both sides. Just stop it. Stop being a pig. Grant says, this woman once passed out and drooled on my lap on the plane after taking a sleeping tablet. What, and you just tolerated that?
What are you going to do? Prop them up?
You press the tit and you call the stewardess or whatever her name is and you say, this is not fucking on. I'm not going to sit and deal with this. You sort this out.
Drag her down the aisle by her feet.
Anything that you need sorted out on a plane, you press the tit or you press wherever the tit is, you press it and you get the woman there and then she goes, hi, sir, can I help you? And you go, yes, you actually can. And then you give her something to do. She'll be grateful. You'll be grateful.
Besides the drooling and all that stuff, my worst on an airplane is when you have a talkative person next to you.
Oh, God.
I talk for a freaking living. I do not want to talk to you. It's got nothing to do with you as a person. I just don't want to talk to you.
George, the worst is this guy it's a couple of weeks ago. I went to the sauna at the gym after I'd done some training and I was sitting in there and this old man, I think he was just deranged. He was just talking non-fucking-stop, nonsense. Like, oh, well, when I get home this afternoon, I think I'll have a nap. You're like, I don't need to hear all this, you crazy old man. Shut up.
Should be and quiet time.
And everybody who came in, he had to have a full conversation. So what do you do? I mean, the shame. The guy probably doesn't have friends. He's probably very lonely. Maybe his wife has died or she's glad she's died or whatever. But this guy was such a pain in the ass. And eventually I was like, no. I stayed in there for all of like 3 minutes and then I decided, fuck this.
So would you rather experience that or what Gray A has said in the comments, 3UP?
I've had a woman's baby projectile shit on me and my book. What made it worse was the fact that the food cart was in the aisle and I had to wait to go and wash the crap off me. It was everywhere. I would.
On a guy, right?
Oh, my God. I'd rather have the guy talking shit in the sauna.
Yeah. Besides the baby shit, these things are the most useful to stop people from talking to you.
What's that, George? Yes.
AirPods.
Yeah,
they are the most useful because I put them in before I sit down, and the person next to me can see there's a blockage. Don't talk.
Slippery Pickle says, "I think Garrett's going to be talkative like that when he's an old man. When I'm old and senile, I will not. I'm already basically like a mute. If you meet me in an airport or on a plane or anywhere where I'm doing stuff, you won't get a lot of words out of it."
That's why I love traveling by myself, just that quiet time. You don't have to speak to anybody.
Oh, it's so nice. Best. And I also do the AirPods thing too, George. But there's some people who are stubborn, hey? They don't take no for an answer. They're like, hi, how are you? And you're like, and they go, hey, I want to talk to you about something, huh? And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Take them out. Yes, what is it? What do you want?
But most people, don't you find they dig to try and find out what it is you do?
Oh, God.
And I'm trying to dodge this question because I don't really want to get into a conversation of, oh, okay, my business can do this for you.
Oh, yeah. Or in your case, they probably want to ask you all about, so like, can you get me a good deal on a car, hey?
That's true.
George is like,
I've heard it many times.
George is like, I really want to say just fuck off, but I can't say that. So instead I'll say, no, I really can't. Hey, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, I can't.
I wonder how many people have lied about what they do to make it sound as boring as possible so that it doesn't spark further conversation.
Yeah, I've done exactly. That.
Yeah, I've done that too. When I was in radio in full time, I never used to say I was.
No.
I'd you know, say something else, something general like social media.
I always assume that people don't know who I am or what I do. And then I try to see how far I can take it. Like I'll say, I'm an inventor and I've come up with some device that, you know, will help you to clean out your asshole and you don't need to use toilet paper. And people are like, oh, really? And I can normally, there's very few people in South Africa who will fall for it, but the rest of the world, it works like a charm. And then they stop talking to you. They're like, what a gross, horrible thing to be inventing.
Well, just say you're a plumber, you know.
But you won't believe it. People will start talking to you about plumbing, man.
My uncle's a plumber.
Yeah. There are just these, there are a lot of very, very bored, lonely people in the world who need to talk to someone. I've realized this. And they'll talk to you no matter what. So here's something really appalling. Look at this. It's a naked Donald Trump.
Oh, my.
Isn't it's a marionette. Horrible?
It's a marionette. It's very disturbing.
I sent a lot of pictures of this because I thought it was hilarious how the photographer's taken absolutely every single angle of this thing. So it's a real thing.
He's got a penis and everything.
Yeah, it was a bit longer than what Stormy described it as, but definitely mushroom shaped.
What is it made of?
So it's part of the Crooked and Obscene project. It's made of foam over rebar. Weighs nearly 6,000 pounds, and it will be toured across the US. It's 43 feet tall, and it has made its debut now in Las Vegas.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's absolutely terrible, but it's meant to be. You know, it's the crooked and obscene. So I'm not quite sure what the meaning behind it is. They're saying Trump in the nude is intentional, serving as a bold statement on transparency, vulnerability, and the public personas of political figures. I just think it's an opportunity to have a laugh, really.
Yeah.
But this thing is horrible. So it's going on tour across the United States. Dates and cities for the tour not yet announced.
But they've got his arm gesture wrong because he's always doing this like he's playing an accordion.
Yes,
correct. Maybe once they use the strings to move him around, because he is a marionette, they'll do that. This is my favorite, the old man bum with the two little wrinkles.
Oh, that's horrific. Yes, that's bad.
It's awful.
Yeah, sure. That's really awful. And you know, I mean, the fact is, again, I'm certainly not going to stand up for like Donald Trump in terms of his athleticism, but the guy's not in horrific shape for an old man. I heard somebody saying the other day they think he's overweight or whatever. He's got more energy than most people I know. And he may not be a perfect specimen, but he's like almost 80 years old. And I think he's in pretty decent shape. He plays a lot of golf. He's not bad. You know?
For 80 years old, if you think about the majority of 80-year-olds need to have some sort of assistance in some way, shape, or form, battle to walk upstairs, battle to walk downstairs.
Yeah.
You know, he's not any of that.
And I know, like, they've done this because they want to embarrass him. And, you know, they obviously don't like Donald Trump. And that's fine. You don't have to like Donald Trump. But honestly, I don't think the guy's so bad for 80 years old. And the fact that he's, like, running for president when he doesn't have to has always struck me as a very interesting proposition. I mean, he really has. He could have the most perfect life ever. He could just play golf all day. He could live in Mar-a-Lago in Florida. He's got these houses all over America. He's got so much money. He doesn't need to work. And I just wonder, like, you know, would I have the energy at 80 years old to even contemplate standing for office for 4 years? I don't think I would.
But I wouldn't even. He's driven by power. Surely that's something that never dies out.
I don't know if it's driven by power, Leanne, or if it's what Gareth said right in the beginning, which is driven to win.
Yeah.
There's this competitiveness in him that drives him to win something all the time.
Somebody says here, now do Carmela. Can you imagine? Do you think there would be an outcry if they did like a naked Carmela?
Absolutely. 100%.
So I always think
the world is not fair and equal.
So where there's hypocrisy, I have a problem. So if we did a naked Carmela and she was touring around the country, I'd say, cool, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. But here, I think you're right, Leanne. Like, people would have a shit fit if they made a naked Kamala Harris and toured her around America, which just proves that the one side has a sense of humor and can handle things, and the other side does not.
I mean,
we need to commission one of those for Gareth, says Slippery Pickle. Of me, that would be horrific. Jesus.
I don't know if I'd want to see that. I don't want to see any of it. I don't
even want to see Carmela. I don't want to see it. Okay. And I have to look at it in the mirror every fucking day.
Yeah.
Who's George? Is that your phone?
Busy man. Somebody's got to phone me. Oh, I must show you something. There is the coolest thing that I got a little while ago, which was one of these.
What is the oh?
What is that?
This is a bug gun.
Yes, bug assault. Yes,
the whole toot. Bug assault. This thing is so effective. Takes salt in the top.
Yeah.
And it you can take flies or mosquitoes right out of the air.
Didn't your dad fire that thing?
Yeah, I got one for my dad for I think it was Christmas 2 years ago. George, he loves it. And now that summer's coming, that's a very useful thing to have.
Last night,
would it take out like a,
last night in this room, there was a fly flying around. I took the fly. It took me about 10 minutes, but I took the fly right out of his flight.
That's beautiful.
Would it take out like a big rain spider?
I've taken out spiders. Yeah, a little rain spider. I had to shoot him about 3 or 4 times before he saw his demise.
I don't, you guys mustn't kill the rain spiders. And I don't want to sound like a tree hugger here, but those rain spiders, they eat and kill terrible insects that you don't want.
No, they eat and kill the geckos who are eating the mosquitoes, which the spiders won't waste their time on that size. I just don't want them in my house. They're too big to not have an invitation. There was one in here the other day. I thought I had a hornet's nest growing in the corner. Once I called someone for help, it unfolded itself and it was about 8 times the size of what it looked like it was. That's not welcome in my house without an invitation. Sorry.
Spiders actually do catch mozzies, etc., says Percy.
Well, this one could have eaten a cat, just like those Haitians.
Those rain spiders, they get big.
Yeah.
You're supposed to catch the fly with your index finger and thumb and chuck it in the toilet, says Slippery Pickle.
Chuck Norris style.
But you see, George, what's clever about that gun is they've gamed like killing insects now. So it becomes a thing. This is the cool thing about being a guy, Leanne. I don't know if girls are the same on this front. You can maybe help me. But if you give us a gun like that with salt in it to kill flies, every fly becomes the most intense game. There's no one else in the room, right? It's just you. And I can see George like climbing on top of furniture, reloading, getting up close. Like, exactly. This is fun.
There's salt on this table because of that fly.
Yes, exactly. Right.
No, I don't think. But gamification is a whole interesting thing in itself. And looking at the Discovery point system, gamification is being flouted now as one of the top trends for your brand. If you're going to have a brand, you need to start introducing some kind of gamification, which is what we've done with one of our brands and introduced a VR game, a virtual paddle game. That's what people are after. They're up for the challenge. And it's the same for women. When you look at what sort of points we get on our apps, and the types of games we play, they might be more sort of strategic rather than just firing a weapon.
Sure.
They might be accumulating points for serving the community with your farming goods in like a Farmville type vibe. But no, women enjoy it too.
I wonder if you looked at like online games or, I know there was Comic-Con over the weekend in Joburg. Yes. And I wonder if you looked at the numbers of men and women who play games, whether it's on PCs or Xboxes or PlayStations or whatever. I wonder how those numbers would line up. I mean, what the percentage male and female is, because I'm sure it's still mostly male, right?
Well, I had two stands there at Comic-Con. And just looking at the crowds, I would say it's really starting to meet up to a 50-50 level. So I'll obviously, as an exhibitor, get stats from Comic-Con, so I'd be able to get those.
But I'd be interested.
From a digital marketing point of view, the stats have increased phenomenally in terms of what women are looking for when it comes to gamification. And there, as Bitcoin Butt says, tokenization as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is an international statistic, but 54% male attendance at Comic-Con, 44% female, there's been a 7% increase in female attendees.
Oh, really? You have it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I think it is becoming a thing for men and women to do. I think that's it's very cool. I mean, listen, I'm no big gamer, but I can see how people would rather do that. And the strategy games are fascinating. I mean, there are things now that you can do that actually train you and teach you about business and about strategic imperatives in your own life, trying to kind of line things up, how to do tasks better. And I think this is great. And games are a good way to learn a lot of those behaviors.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty wild. There's something else that you wanted to tell us about, Leanne, which I thought could be quite interesting. Sloppy screenshot enables cops to nab Eastern Cape kidnappers. What's this all about?
I don't know if you've heard about this kidnapping saga, which unfolded in the Eastern Cape, but there were two women kidnapped in the Eastern Cape. I think within 1 to 3 weeks of each other. I'll probably see the stats as I go down. But what happened was during this operation, so one of the kidnappers was asked for proof of life of one of the kidnapped women called Elise van der Merwe. And so they sent a photograph, but it wasn't a photo that they'd taken with their own phone. One of them took a photo of the other kidnapper's phone, and on it was the screenshot. It had a whole lot of phone numbers of the other kidnappers in the ring. Sloppy exchange of digital information by the suspects. And that's the key information that led to police arresting these two suspects. They killed four of them and wounded another. They found the two female hostages. And they found
Is this one of them here?
That's one of the hostages. That's Elise van der Merwe.
Wow. Didn't she get dropped off at a police station because they got afraid?
May have been.
Wow.
May have been, but the other was an unnamed Chinese national. They still haven't found her car. There we go. 3 days apart. They were kidnapped earlier in September. So van der Merwe's vehicle was found near Mthatha. And the second vehicle yet to be located. And it was this big kidnapping ring and this sloppy screenshot, which led to its demise.
Yeah, you know what? People are so dumb. And because photographs are an everyday thing, people don't think about what they include in those photographs. And we all know these stories about how hackers on the internet have been able to track down someone because they've worked out the angle of the sun through the window in a picture. And the time of day, and there's a clock in the background, so they can tell roughly where in the world they are. And they can actually pinpoint these days with IP addresses and the rest of it exactly where you are. So,
I mean,
if you've got smart people, you can figure out very, very large amounts of information from one picture.
Well, just give it to the internet sleuths. They really have come together to solve a lot of crimes and a lot of mysteries.
Pros and cons of 1984.
Thank goodness these kidnappers were idiots in this case, says Raven. Yeah, I mean, how amazing that they managed to get these guys. They were so dumb, right?
But what's also good is that there was no ransom exchanged at all. And that's always the thing that we know in these cases police try to avoid, just so, you know, to stop encouraging that kind of behavior in future.
Yeah, correct.
And both were unarmed.
Remember how they identified that hockey mom by her vagina in that hockey group?
Jeez, that's a blast from the past.
You remember that?
Isn't that where the concept of Karen came from, or was that a different thing?
No, it was a different one, but that was hilarious. I mean, shame, that poor woman. I still feel very sorry for her. I was always on her side. It was the other women in that group who I have a problem with.
Oh,
that's when you know you're not part of a squad.
Yeah, exactly. Spot on. All right. Well, that's all we got time for this morning, everybody. But George, nice to see you. Enjoy all your travels to Portugal and Poland in this month. Mm. What are you doing in Poland?
So one of our group businesses, Auto Trader Shareholders, is in Poland. So there's a couple of businesses in Europe. And I'm traveling to have a series of meetings with those heads of those businesses. So it's really just kind of we learn from each other because we've all got the same businesses, and we're all on a similar path, but it's similar place, different places on that path. You know,
when you do these business trips, do you get a chance to like look around, or is it all work the whole way through?
Yeah, so my assistant almost nags me to take a day or two and go and sightsee. So I'll probably do it partly because she nags me, but also partly because I want to see the area. Quite often I just want to get back home, but I am taking a day or two in Portugal because I love Portugal too. Portugal is such a beautiful.
So we mentioned George is only visiting countries that start with a P-O this year. So Congo Chris says you must go to Uzbekistan.
I knew Congo Chris was going to jump on that.
Uzbekistan, that's great. Wouldn't that be funny if there was actually a country called Uzbekistan?
Yeah, no one realized except Afrikaans people or people who know Afrikaans what it was.
That'd be so great. All right, George, have a happy time and let us know how it goes.
I will indeed.
All right. Thanks, S. Have a happy day. And we will see everybody on Wednesday morning, bright and early at 6 o'clock. Have an excellent Monday and a terrific week, everyone. Thanks so much. See you later. Bye.